Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to you, Jenny Green. It's Tuesday, the 2nd of November, and this is Game On. Coming up today, Ray Houghton and Mark Langdon are standing by as Conte is confirmed for Spurs. And it's another crucial night for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in the Champions League.
Criticism can make you doubt yourself, or you can stand up for yourself, and I've always enjoyed criticism. Just keep that coming, that's fine. And you know, journalists, pundits, experts, we've all got different jobs, and it's their job to give their opinions, and that's their job. I'm not here to fight with them. Don't need a spat with anyone.
Very grown up, Ole. Chelsea are already in Champions League action in Malmo. I believe it was nil all at half time. More on that shortly. Closer to home, we'll have first half updates from Waterford City against Derry City. And in rugby, we'll check in with James Collin on his brief but successful stint as head coach with Toulon, and Johnny Sexton ahead of his 100th Irish cap.
You know, I had to work a long time to get that one cap, and I was unbelievably happy to get the one. And yeah, I never in a million years thought I'd still be playing, and I was gutted to miss the French game last year, because I knew that if I kept fit and kept my form that I would have played my 100th against England. But everything happens for a reason, and hopefully, you know, getting your 100th cap in front of some people will be more special, I think. And
if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Did I just say Waterford City instead of Waterford FC?
You did, but I was a bit distracted because you said that it was half time in the Chelsea Malmo match, and there's only 18 minutes gone. It's nil all.
I thought it kicked off at 5 o'clock.
Quarter to six, I think.
Thought it was 5 o'clock. Anyway, there you are, still nil all after 15
minutes.
Look, I'm
back, so. And I'm giving you a stick.
So don't worry.
Normality.
I thought Shamrock Rovers were in the cup final next week, so don't worry about that, Marie. That was last night's
faux pas.
Faux pas. I was going to say something a little bit more abrupt, but it's not after the watershed, so I'm glad I didn't put my own neck on the line. But Marie, you're back from 5 days in Paris with three boys, and I believe you were at every sporting event there was in Paris over the weekend. PSG v Lille, Racing v Toulouse. Did they get any look at Disneyland, no?
We did a little bit of Disneyland, yeah. We got Disneyland out of the way first, so we gave them the whole day out there, and they loved it. It was brilliant. I'd completely recommend it. But we then moved on to the sporting side of the holiday, which was pretty superb. I'd recommend Paris for any sports fans out there, because there are a lot of big teams out there, great atmospheres and great games. So on the Friday night, we went to see PSG and Lille. We were up in the clouds. Our tickets were really high up, but we were right next to the ultras. So it was just amazing. They never stopped from one end of the game to the next. And like, I've been to see Roma play. I've been to see Bayern Munich. I've been to Barcelona. I was at that Manchester City Liverpool game in the Champions League. But this was just out of this world. They were just phenomenal. There were so many of them. I'd say definitely 40% of them had their tops up. That will just give you the scale of the effort they were putting into the chanting. I'm not sure what they were saying, but they were just brilliant. They had the whole stadium rocking.
Unbelievable. That's what I don't know. Is that what you need? But at least they have enthusiastic fans. And what about the rugby then? Was that scaled down compared to the soccer, or are they making as much noise?
That was really different. Like Racing have the Defence Arena, which is the indoor one, and it was just a completely different experience. So like, it's just watching, you're watching a game inside, so it's lovely and warm. It's just a really nice kind of feeling being in a place like that, that's pretty much brand new. Like, the fans again were brilliant, but there's a whole different tone to it, because it's much more reserved maybe than the football is, but at the same time it's still a really cool experience, because it's like going to a nightclub. You go in, and well, actually before you go in, when you're waiting to go in, all the players come through the crowd, so there's a big kind of build up, the team's arriving and everyone's chanting as Racing come in. And then when you go inside and take your seats, there's a big light show, there's this big massive screen at one end of the stadium that has kind of a bit of a show going on as well. And then after the game, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. So within about 3 minutes, they've cordoned off where the players are. They whip out all these bars. So they erect all these portable bars all around the stadium. And then they have this big mad nightclub disco thing. So all of the fans that are there, like the 35,000, just descend onto the pitch. The DJ sets up and like they're just gone bananas. People are crowd surfing everywhere. The players are down the other end. There's an interaction with them as well, so you can go up and get your picture taken. My lads are really lucky. They got to go up and they met Mike Prendergast, who was there from Limerick, and he brought them in, and they met Finn Russell, and Finn Russell gave them their jersey, his jersey. So it was just this brilliant experience. Like, we just had the best time. They had the best time. It was fantastic.
Well, some treat for kids, but obviously you didn't have the same, quite the same connection in PSG. No one got Messi short, no?
Messi was fascinating. So I'd seen him in Barcelona, and the whole way through the game, the whole crowd are just chanting Messi, Messi, like for the whole 90 minutes. It's just non-stop. Now, he did go off at halftime, but there just wasn't that same connection with the PSG fans at all. I didn't hear his name once. He was injured, so he wasn't given 100% anyway. I know we'd spoken a few times on the show about how his game has changed, so I just spent the whole first half glued to him to see what he was doing. The amount of walking around he does is phenomenal. Now, when he gets going, like his acceleration and his movement is class, but he spends so much time just like walking around the place. It's mad. He's conserving energy, obviously. It's what he does now that he's a little bit older. But just because I've been aware of it, it was just really fascinating to see. So you see everybody else and they're expending energy and they're running around and they're chasing the ball, and he's just strolling around waiting for that exact moment to pounce.
And if you're a Poch, what are you thinking? I'm just thinking here, how can you... Now, I know you're Lionel Messi, but how can you walk around in a game that's been played at just speed all around you and expect to stay on the pitch?
I presume there's science behind it. Like, there has to be science behind it because he's doing so much of it. Now, then the other extreme is Neymar, who spent so much time just rolling around on the ground. Now, I'd never seen Neymar play before, and I was curious as well to see if he is over-exaggerating or he does get a lot of attention. Now, he really does get a lot of attention. He got kicked around quite a bit, but he does milk it then when he gets kicked around. Like, at one stage, he got hit by the ball and fell over and spent ages on the ground, and like, it was clear as day he'd just been hit by the ball. No one had even kicked him, so it's almost like the boy who cries wolf. He had been kicked loads of times, but if he just maybe didn't react as much to the ones that were innocuous, you'd have a little bit more sympathy for him. But it was really cool to see them play, because especially with Messi, like, who knows when we're going to get the opportunity to see him play again. Just great experiences for the family, and would really recommend it. And even the PSG tickets, like, they weren't that dear. They were €49, so like, it's much cheaper than Disneyland. I'll say that.
I know. I think like they're looking for €60 to sit in the roof of the Aviva at the weekend to watch Ireland play in Japan. I'd say that is pretty good value.
Yeah, and I can't tell you how amazing the atmosphere was. Like, it's just like something I've never seen or experienced before. And I have been to all the big stadiums and seen a lot of the teams around Europe. Obviously, I've never been to South America. Apparently, there's brilliant experiences there when you go to the likes of Boca Juniors and River Plate. But just for that whole Ultras experience, it's almost worth going. And then obviously you have the brilliant footballers on the pitch as well, which is great too.
It sounds like your lads will be in Rio de Janeiro or wherever those games are at some stage, Marie.
It's on the list. They really are. Like, it's 24/7 we watch YouTube. Well, we watch, the television is on with YouTube videos of fans in different stadiums around, and it's more often than not South American football, so it's definitely on the list.
I'm sure it is. Anyway, we have Champions League soccer tonight, which is live on RT, I do believe.
It is, yes. Atalanta and Manchester United, I think they kick off at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock, I'm not going to suggest any more kick-off times tonight. Which I did read that somewhere, though. I'm going to find out where I read that. I'm not sure where it was. But anyway, I do believe we have a few guests on the line, Ray Houghton and Mark Langdon are with us to discuss what's coming up tonight, later on even.
Ray should be there now. Ray.
Oh, yeah, you okay?
I'm
yeah, we're
good.
Great, Ray. How are you keeping, Ray? Good?
Yeah, good, thanks, Ruby. All
good. Good,
yeah,
good. Obviously,
good. Forward to the game.
What do you think, Ray? I mean, obviously, when they met a couple of weeks ago, United got, I think, out of jail to win 3-2, really. A sense of performance won't do tonight, but will Ole set up like he did against Spurs, or will he go back to what he played against Villarreal?
Well, it depends what players he's got fit. There was a rumour that Lindelof might not be okay for tonight. We'll have to wait and see her beyond that. If you look to the games prior to that, when they played with that back four, the same back four and goalkeeper against Leicester, they conceded four. Next game was against Atalanta, they conceded two. And the game after that, with the same back five, if you like, they conceded five to Liverpool. So there was good reason why he changed to three centre-backs against Tottenham, got the win, there was a bit more solidity about them. And I think if everyone's fitting well tonight, he'll probably go with the same sort of setup because it worked for him in the last game. It's a game that United win. They've got 9 points from their first four games, so very much in control of the group, and more than likely they'll qualify for the next stages of the Champions League. So the onus is on them to go there and back up that performance against Tottenham.
Obviously, Paul Pogba is back from a domestic ban, so he can play tonight. Would you put him back in, or was that holding performance against Spurs because he wasn't on the pitch?
Well, the thing is, though, they've got a massive game against their great rivals, Man City, on Saturday early. So, as you just mentioned there, Ruby, he won't be available for that. So the manager might put him in tonight. You know, he might try to just look after this squad as best he can. I listened to, you know, his chat for the game tonight. It's all chatting. He's saying he's just got to try and manage one game at a time. But in the back of his mind, he knows he's got some really important games coming up. Even if they weren't to win tonight, they've got Villarreal away and Young Boys at home. So there's plenty of opportunities to pick up enough number of points. So you've just got to look at the players he's got available. You'll ask them how fit they are going into tonight's game, and you'll hopefully, you know, get the best 11 going out there. And Paul Popper's just got to fight for his position now. You know, he knows that he's been left out a couple of times this season, and he wants to be in there as a regular, and the only way you've got to put down your mark is when you get your chance, you play well. Exactly. I mean, I thought in his interview he was very honest about that, Ollie. You know, there'll be players that are unhappy they're not in the starting 11, but that's not his problem at the moment. His problem is getting to win games, getting the consistency of performance and the consistency of the results.
Which is more important for him, Ray, do you think? Should he be focusing on the Premier League? Should he be looking at the Champions League and trying to win those games first? I know he says he's taking each game at a time, but like, would he be better off just maybe prioritising something?
No, I don't think you can. You're at a club like Man United, I've got to be honest with you. The demands it's put on you as a manager, as a player, Ruby will tell you, you know, and when you're the top of your sport, you know, you can't say, well, I'm just going to, you know, do well in that one and I won't take that one, you know, so importantly. You just can't afford to do that. You have to be on your mettle. That's why you're a top player. That's why you're at a top club. And it's up to you to, you know, as a squad, as a manager, to get the best out of your players and as players to go out there and give it your all. You know, you've got to give it 100%. You've got to believe that, you know, if you get your chance, you're going to be in that starting 11. You're going to play well and you're going to win matches. And for Ollie at the moment and the pressure that he's under, you know, he wants to win games as quickly as possible and start getting the fans on side and, you know, all the media attention that's on him at the moment, get it to going in a positive light rather than the negative way certainly went after the Liverpool game.
It was interesting to hear the Atalanta boss talking about that Manchester United team. Obviously, he'd have so much experience playing the top teams like Liverpool and Manchester City. But he said they're like a team under construction, which seems actually like a pretty good assessment with them. He said, you know, the likes of the Liverpools and the Man City were organised and solid with a clear identity. And he seems to have nailed it almost there with those words.
Yeah, I think he was honest enough with that appraisal of the teams that you've seen in England. And I think Manchester United are a team that are, you know, under construction. You know, just because they brought in Sancho and they brought in Varane and they brought in Ronaldo at the start of the season, everyone thought, that's it. You know, here we are. We're going to be great. Watch out, Man United are going to be brilliant. But it doesn't work that way. You have to, you know, be doing it every day in training. I remember when Jurgen Klopp first came into Liverpool and I went to see them pre-season against Fleetwood Town. And I think Manny was on one wing and Salah was on the other. And he was constantly screaming at them to get back into positions. And that was the driving force because he wanted them to play in a certain way that can affect the game. So he was on to them all the time. And that's what you've got to do, you know, religiously in training. These players have got to buy into what the manager's trying to get across to them. And then they've got to go out and perform. At the moment, there's lots of players there. There doesn't seem to be a plan. You know, they brought in Sancho. I don't know where he's going to fit in at some stage. Van de Beek, about a season or so ago, there seems to be no room for him. So they're bringing in players without really having, in my opinion, a clear plan of where they're going to be in that starting 11. And I think that's one of the problems that they've got. Until he sorts that out and gets a consistent side playing, you know, week in, week out, and I think you start seeing the performances levels and the results start to improve.
I think that's pretty clear from Ollie's statement yesterday as well, Ray. I mean, he said the quality of what the players did was more important than the system we play. So is he looking for them just to figure it out and give their everything? And he's not worried about the system? I found it a confusing enough statement. He wasn't too worried about the system, more what they were doing.
Well, I think what the problem has been and what's been levelled against the players, Ruby, was that, you know, their stats for running wasn't very good. And I heard Gary Neville say, I think, well, they were one of the lowest in the Premier League, you know, for getting around the pitch. And, you know, when you've got that talent, as Manchester United have got, then you would think that the basics, which is running around and chasing the ball and winning it back, is the thing that you should be doing the most. And then your ability will shine through. You know, and that's not been happening with them. So I think that's what you said about Saturday. At least we had the endeavour. We had the attitude. We had the commitment. And then allied to the ability we've got, if we've got that side of it working well, I know with the quality that we've got, that we'll win games. But maybe, you try to put across to the players, I need to see that level of commitment every game. Every time you get into the match, I've got to see it from now until the end of the season. Not, you know, because you have someone has a go at you and, you know, the social media's crying out for, you know, better performances. You then deliver for one game. And that's what's saying, I'll need consistency from now on. So we'll see tonight, you know, if they are going to build on that performance against Tottenham on Saturday.
It's a funny one, Ray. Before you came on, Marie was in Paris at the weekend. She was watching PSG and she basically told us Lionel Messi walked around for the whole of the first half.
Well, he does. You know, he does. That's what he does. You know, it's a great saying, you know, if you're in the best position, Ruby, don't run away from it. You know, a lot of bad players get into positions and then they run away from it because they think their stats are running is the most important thing. So they run everywhere. They never get on the ball. And I know he's coming probably to the end of his career, and that's just something that he's done. But he normally stands in the best position so you can give him the ball, and then when he gets on the ball, then he can do a bit of magic and turn the game. But listen, you know, they're not the players that they once were. You know, they're not as fit as they used to be. They don't get around the pitch like they once did. That just comes to every player at a certain time, and I think Messi's at that stage of the month. It's such an easy league for them. You know, they're going to win that quite comfortably, I would imagine, once again this season. And it's just a saying, and I think most fans would like to see them in the Premier League just to see how they're coping with it.
Yeah, actually, it was definitely calculated running all right. I don't know how much it would he would have been able to do it in the Premier League, but he was definitely able to do it against Lille on Friday night anyway. Mark Langdon joins us now. Mark, we're constantly talking about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer under pressure. One of the names that was linked to the job was Antonio Conte. He will not be going for the job now as he is going to be, or he is the new Spurs manager. Should he have held out maybe a few more weeks, or do you think that it was never going to come his way and he's right to take this Spurs job?
Whether he's right to take the Spurs job, I'm not so sure. I mean, it will certainly test the sort of win at all costs mentality, you know, and that serial winner tag. I don't think the Manchester United job was actually going to him. I mean, there's been sort of, you know, pretty strong reports coming out that, you know, that was more him trying to, you know, get himself linked to that job rather than Manchester United ever being interested in Antonio Conte, rightly or wrongly. I mean, he's a fantastic manager and I think he would have done really well at Manchester United. But I don't think he was ever sort of seriously sort of being linked with that job. And then you kind of go around the real sort of super clubs. He's not getting Liverpool anytime soon. Pep seems very settled. You know, Thomas Tuchel as well. I mean, the jobs were kind of running out at that real sort of highest level for Conte. And I think he's just felt, well, let's just go to the Premier League. You know, it's the best league in the world at the moment. I'm at a club that, you know, could and should be doing better. And if he does win a trophy, you know, if it's just an FA Cup or even if it's a League Cup, you know, he will be seen as an absolute god, really. I mean, the 5,000 days without a trophy success now, Tottenham. So maybe felt like the only way was up. He's getting paid very well, you know, for the privilege of living in London and working at a club that probably should be doing better. And, you know, I think those are probably the reasons why he's taking it, because, you know, he's not going to get one of those, you know, I suppose, if you like, the big four in England at the moment.
Ray, how do you think the players are going to react to Conte, just given the fact that they haven't reacted well to their last couple of managers? And also, when you think of his win-at-all-costs mentality that Mark mentioned there, I heard a clip of him over the last couple of days, and he said that if he had a player with a bad attitude, he'd rather kill him than keep him. So he does seem to be quite determined to make players do what he wants to do. How do you think they're going to react to him?
Well, it's a wake-up call for a lot of Tottenham players. In my opinion, they've been coasting for the last 18 months or so. I think the recruitment's been dreadful. If you think back to, you know, when they got to the Champions League final and the players had then, you had the likes of Alderweireld, Vertonghen, you've now got Eric Dier playing at centre back with Sanchez at times, Romero. I just don't think they're quite, you know, the standard that you would expect. And that comes down to the buying power or lack of buying power. They should have actually, years ago, backed Pochettino. You know, they didn't give him the funding, they didn't give him the money to go out there and do the job that he wanted to do to move Tottenham on. And I think they've really regressed in the last few seasons. But I think he's going to be good for Tottenham. And you know what? I think he would have been good at Man United as well, because I think a few players need to wake up and really learn about football and what it means. It's just not being from the age of 6 or 7 and everyone's saying, you're a great player, you're a great player, you're a great player. You've got to learn about the game, you know, as you go along. You've got your mentors who help you along the way. And I think the likes of the Man United players at times, some of the youngsters, have not learned how to defend. And I think that's coming back to hurt them at the moment. That's some of the reasons why they haven't performed as well this season. And I think with Tottenham, it's the recruitment. Recruitment policy there has been fairly poor for the last few years. And they've wasted an awful lot of money. This manager will come in. I think they'll get funding. And you'll see you'll start to see a change in the way that Tottenham play. And if they're not good enough, he'll get rid of them. He'll get rid of them quickly. And that's the right way to do it.
It sounds like a business plan to me, and Harry Kane could do it with some motivation too. Ray Houghton, thanks a million. Best of luck with your commentary on Atalanta and Manchester United. Mark Langdon, there are some more managerial movements in the Premier League as well, and Unai Emery is favoured for the Newcastle job. Can you see him taking it? Will he leave Villarreal?
Oh, I couldn't a little while ago, but I mean, the rumours are getting stronger about Emery sort of coming back to the Premier League. I don't think Villarreal would be absolutely gutted to see him leave. This season hasn't gone as well as they would have hoped. Last season was fantastic. He won the Europa League. He is Mr. Europa League. He does so well in that competition, but just seems to struggle. And I would say this has been something that's happened throughout his career when expectations start to rise. So Villarreal were hoping to do more this year. You know, Arsenal were hoping to take that next step under him. It didn't happen. You know, at Paris Saint-Germain, he was given the opportunity at a really big club and just couldn't quite do it. And I think that's sort of been Unai Emery's sort of career, really. Even with Sevilla, he did fantastically well in the Europa League, and then when it came to the Champions League, he couldn't quite do it. And obviously a very different job that he would be taking at Newcastle. The only thing he needs to do this season, if he were to get it, is to stay in the Premier League. The potential is obvious at Newcastle, you know, for the next few years if they can survive in the Premier League. But, he's not somebody really that's been used to these relegation battles in recent years. And I also think that it's not even about the manager at Newcastle. It's the recruitment. Ray just mentioned it there about Tottenham. Newcastle need 6, 7 and maybe even 8 new players if they're to stay in the Premier League. And that's going to be, I think, that the biggest sort of job that he or whoever takes that sort of responsibility on, because that they need to persuade good players to go there. And that won't be easy if the team's sort of, 19th in the Premier League in January.
Is he the man to do that? Like, do you think that he is the right fit, just given the amount of money that he's going to have at his disposal and his reputation in the Premier League, as you kind of outlined there, and the fact that when the pressure comes on, he doesn't perform that well? Like, it's not going to get any more pressurised than at Newcastle.
No, it's not. I mean, I still think that he's a good manager. You know, he's better than fighting relegations. And I suppose Newcastle are thinking a little bit more long term, that, you know, that he's somebody that they believe in, and that, you know, even if you're in a relegation battle, you should sort of avoid those relegation specialists, if you like, and just bring in who you think the best person for the job is. Because, you know, there was that sort of thing about, wasn't there, that, you know, Big Sam never gets relegated. But, you know, it's only true until it's not true. And, you know, eventually that run out. And I think that he would be a good appointment for Newcastle, for sort of, even for the position that they're in. I think that he would be able to attract a certain calibre of player, because, you know, he is somebody that at the moment is managing in the Champions League, he's managed in the Europa League, he's managed a number of big teams. I think you could kind of buy into what he wanted, particularly if you were, I suppose, a foreign player. And, you know, he's got a good reputation in Spain. I think he's got a decent contact book. He would, I think, be able to improve some of those players that are there, you know, in sort of 6, 7 years' time, if Newcastle want to start, you know, challenging challenging for the title. I don't think he'd be that person, but I certainly think he better than Eddie Howe, who is supposed to be the guy that he's up against for this position. You know, Eddie Howe has been out of the game a reasonable amount of time now, and I'm not sure where his next job comes from, but if I were a Newcastle fan, I'd probably prefer Emery to Eddie Howe.
Well, Rome wasn't built in a day, so it has to start somewhere. Mark, is it a storm in a teacup? Diego Simeone running off down the tunnel, not shaking hands with Jurgen Klopp, or is it just plain bad manners?
I don't like to see it. I think that you should just acknowledge the other manager at the end of a game. I think it's sort of the done thing, and if you don't, it becomes a bigger deal than it needs to be. I'm not even sure what Diego Simeone was upset about, because I felt both sort of all three big decisions went. Went the right way, really. You know, Liverpool deserved their penalty. It wasn't a penalty for Atletico, and it definitely was a red card for Griezmann. I felt it was sort of bad manners, bad attitude from Simeone, but he kind of thrives on that. I think he would have already been thinking about the next game and sort of getting his players up for that, and he kind of loves that, you know, them against us mentality. So there was probably a little bit of that in it, rather than him sort of being bad-mannered, you know, straight towards Jurgen Klopp. I think there probably is a slight bit of tension in the air, because twice Klopp has had a pop at the way that Atletico play football. Even when he was sort of praising them, he still said that it wasn't football he'd like to watch. So there may be a little bit of bad blood, but I'm pretty sure Simeone was just trying to fire his team up for the next match, because, you know, he's somebody that... And, you know, all the best people do, don't they? But he's somebody that absolutely hates losing.
He said today that he doesn't like the falseness of post-match handshakes, and I can kind of understand that. Ruby, would you shake hands with someone that had beaten you in a race?
Yeah, I think it takes the bigger person, no matter how disappointed you are, to turn around and shake hands, whether it is killing you, whether you want or not. I hate bad losers, and I don't think bad losing should be accepted in any sport. Walking off and turning your back, if you saw a child doing it, you tell them to turn around and behave themselves.
But I can see, like as you said there, whether it's killing you or not. So if it's killing you, you don't want to do it. It's kind of false. So
what if it's false? It's still, you still look, the person that's beaten you, you still look them in the eye and say, well done. Whether you mean it or not, it's what they take out of it. But I don't think manners should be just thrown in the bin that quickly, Marie, myself, like everyone else in the world, just going downhill at 100 miles an hour.
Well, Mark, let's move on then. Aguero, he is unwell.
He is, yeah. I mean, this was actually really scary moment at one stage. I don't know if it's just because, you know, the Ericsson situation wasn't that long ago, and then we had the fan collapsing inside the stadium at Newcastle v Spurs. So it's fresh in your mind about what can happen on a football pitch. And this happened against Alaves at the weekend. You know, he went down, he was holding his chest. It wasn't, you know, quite as dramatic as a collapse, but you know, he was struggling to breathe. He was down for a good few minutes. And I think there was, you know, some real concern at that time for Sergio Aguero. He sort of had tests. He's going to be given 3 months off with these chest pains to hopefully see if he can recover. Wish him well. But it was really it was a worrying moment, to see him sort of go down, you know, and be in discomfort in the chest area, because we know that players sort of dive and act and sort of, you know, a bit of gamesmanship when they've been tackled and things like that to try and win free kicks and penalties. But it's those sort of situations when there's nobody around and it happens that you and they're not trying to win free kicks or penalties, that you really do worry for them. And but Barcelona fans have not seen the best of Aguero. He arrived injured, and now he's got another 3 months on the sidelines. He's obviously at sort of veteran status now. Let's just hope that, you know, we get to see sort of more of Aguero playing football, because even if he's past his best, Aguero is still a fantastic player and a real predator in the penalty box. So hopefully after this 3 month rest period, he can come back and still perform at a high level for Barcelona.
Mark, obviously we had the incident at the European Championships during the summer. You had Sergio Aguero at the weekend, but you also had Emil Paulsen playing in Norway, the Icelandic player playing in the Norwegian second division at the weekend, who went down with a cardiac arrest. These are fit athletes. Is it becoming a little trend in soccer? Not a trend, a worrying trend. Or
it is a worrying trend.
It doesn't seem normal to me.
It's not. I mean, you know, I don't know if it's because you get these kind of, you know, high profile incident that then you kind of remember that, and you know, whether it's sort of a growing trend, I'm not so sure. It's certainly something that is really worrying, and this does fall into, I think, the category of what sort of player welfare, and you know, the amount of matches. And I'm not saying that this incident at the weekend or any of them are to do with it, but it certainly does bring into focus the player welfare and sort of how many matches players at all levels are currently playing, and sort of the demands on them seems to be increasing. You were speaking earlier to Ray about, you know, running stats and sort of, you know, how fit you've got to be now to play even at any level really of professional football. And I do think that it's going to bring into debate, you know, this whole idea of a World Cup every 2 years, and, you know, just putting more and more matches on the calendar, because, you know, this thing, that whether it's a trend or not, I'm not so sure, but you don't want to see it ever. And I just think that maybe more needs to be done to help players. They get paid a lot of money, of course they do, but, you know, your heart doesn't know that, and you know, you can only do what you can do. And I certainly think that you will hear more and more complaints from the players' organisations that are looking after the players to try to keep the demands down on footballers.
Okay, Mark Langdon, thank you so much for joining us. There are a lot of games on tonight. It is now halftime, Ruby, in the Chelsea-Malmo game, and it is nil all there, and it is one all between Wolfsburg and Red Bull Salzburg. We are now turning our attention to the SSE Electricity League. There is a crucial game on between Waterford FC and Derry City at the RSC. Oisín Langan is there for us. Oisín, I know it kicked off at 6:15. Just first of all, though, what's the context? Why is this game so important tonight?
Well, it's absolutely huge for both teams, but for different reasons. For Waterford, they're fighting against being in that relegation promotion playoff spot. Of course, Longford are already automatically down as it stands, because Waterford lead by 1-0, spoiler alert. They're now above Finn Harps. They'd be on 42 points if it was to finish like it is now. For Derry City, they would remain in fourth position. They'd be a point ahead of Bowes, and they'd also have the same amount of games played. And then they'd be 7 points behind Sligo, who are in third. So it's very important for the two teams, but for very different reasons. It's looking good at the moment for Waterford.
And OK, so they are 1-0 up. Who got the goal and when did it come?
Well, it came after 3 minutes. We've got just over 19 minutes gone in the game. It was a beautiful move down the left-hand side. It was started by Quaterner, and he was on the end of it as well. He gave it to Patterson. Patterson moved it down to Stafford. Stafford pulled it back, and Quaterner ran onto it at the edge of the box, just inside the box, and smashed it past the goalkeeper, Nathan Garside, who could do nothing to stop it. It was an absolutely beautiful goal, his sixth of the season in the league. So after just over 19 minutes, it's Waterford who lead Derry by 1-0.
And Oisín, just before we head for a break, there's a lot happening on the pitch, but a lot off it as well. And it looks like the Damien Duff move to Shelburne has inched a little bit closer today.
Yes, it seemed that he initially maybe was interested and then said no, but they came back to him again. It seems to be a fait accompli that he will take the job, but then again, so was Davy Fitzgerald going to Galway a couple of weeks ago.
Very true.
But he is quite interested in taking the job. Apparently, one of the things that maybe held him back from it was that he wanted to maybe manage at a higher level, but I think he's probably being promised things that maybe he wanted to be sure in place before he took it over. And the thing with Damien Duff is whether it's fair or unfair, there's maybe a charge leveled against him that he doesn't stick around too long. He left Celtic, but I think he wanted to move home. He left the Republic of Ireland. He kind of outlined his reasons for that. He was at Shamrock Rovers coaching. He's now at Shelburne coaching. That's important, Marie, because he's in the club. He's in the system. He knows what it's about. He's obviously been promised what he wants, and he's been promised the tools to do the job. So it looks like he'll take it over. And he could be working with Joey O'Brien, who's now at Shamrock Rovers. He would have played with Joey at Rovers when he was there as a player. And Joey is still playing, won a league title again the other night with Shamrock Rovers. But he wants to move into coaching and would see this as a good step for him to work with Damien Duff at Shelburne, who are now back, obviously, in the Premier Division, having won the First Division this season.
Just to pick up on a little joke at the beginning there, Oisín, I mean, it was Henry Shefflin that stepped in over Davy Fitz. Who do you have in mind to step in over Damien Duff?
Oh, well, there's a couple
Robbie
of options.
Keane, Jim Robbie Crawford, Keane.
Robbie Keane yet to kind of step up and take a number one spot in a big job. I know he managed in India for a short, brief spell. Jim Crawford was linked to it, but he's managing the Ireland under-21s. Dave Rogers, a former player of the club, a man who scored an iconic goal for the club, has been linked to it. But name-wise, Ruby, you're absolutely right. It's the biggest appointment. But of course, he's never been in this position. So in that sense, it's kind of uncharted waters. It's a bit of a punt.
Yeah, and especially
the first time for everything.
As well, when That's you think true. That one of the reasons that he didn't stick around with the Republic of Ireland was that he was frustrated with a lot of the goings on. I'd say he'd want to have lowered his expectations when he goes into the League of Ireland, because there's a lot that goes on that seems to frustrate people, but he has had that little bit of experience there now. Okay, Oisin, thank you. We will check in with you a little bit later on.
With Green Farms. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farms on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected Tesco's nationwide. On
2FM. Welcome back. It's time now to turn our attention to rugby, and Ireland captain Johnny Sexton is in line to make his 100th appearance for Ireland in Saturday's test against Japan at the Aviva Stadium. Remarkably, he has started 90 of his 99 previous games for Ireland, having made his debut against Fiji in 2009. Did he think back then that he would make it to 100 caps?
I'll try and leave talking about myself to other people as much as I can, but the ability to bounce back is something that I'd like to say I'd be proud of, because in my career I felt like I've had like a lot of brilliant moments, a lot of winning trophies, all those things, all those special memories, but I've also had a hell of a lot of low points as well, which have always driven me. So I suppose if you wanted to be a good role model for kids looking in, that, you know, don't give up and always try and bounce back, and that's what I'd like to think that people would see when they see me. No, and I mean that honestly. When you do get your first cap as late as I did, I know it's not really old, but you know, compared to some other lads that get capped at 20, 21. I had to work a long time to get that one cap, and I was unbelievably happy to get the one, and that was up there with the most special ones, you know what I mean? I never in a million years thought I'd still be playing, but I think over the last few years I've just taken it year on year and see how I felt, and in the back of my mind I kind of, you always had it. I thought, obviously I was gutted to miss the French game last year, because I knew that if I kept fit and kept my form that I would have played my 100th against England, but everything happens for a reason, and hopefully getting your 100th cap in front of some people will be more special, I think, and I'm trying to focus on the game, you know what I mean? I don't want to get drawn away from how important the game is, and I'm trying to get a performance early. We often haven't hit the ground running, and we need to make sure we can do that, ahead of the Six Nations, making sure we can hit the ground running week one.
Johnny Sexton speaking a little bit earlier to the media. Interesting to hear him say that he didn't think he'd make 100 caps. I wonder, is it that he didn't think he'd be playing as long, or that he didn't think that he would reach that milestone of 100? Like, do you set goals like that when you're an elite athlete, Ruby? Did you set goals to win a certain amount of races?
No, I don't think you do, Marie. There's no way. Like, you could dream, possibly, of playing 100 times for Ireland or getting 100 caps, to put it in the correct language. But I don't even think you'd admit that to yourself. And you heard he's open in line there, where he doesn't like talking about himself. I know how he feels that way. That's a hard enough thing to do, to stand up. Maybe some people have the ego to trumpet themselves, but he most certainly doesn't. And he more preferred to focus on the low points, the injuries that drove him forward to get him back going. Yeah, I can relate to that as well. But no, you don't. You have to have a huge ego to think, yeah, I'm going to get 100 caps for Ireland. And I don't think that's Johnny Sexton.
What about you, though? What were your goals? What did you set?
What did I set? I don't think I set any. I think to me, sport was fairly simple. You were only as good as your last winner. And that's what a jockey's life anyway. Sport's about the future. When one race is over, think about the next one. Because, look, I said it in the paper the weekend, but eating bread is quickly forgotten.
Right. Well, Conveniently, we have a former rugby player on the line, a former Munster back row, James Collin, who took temporary charge of Toulon over the weekend. James, first of all, congratulations on taking temporary charge of a team. Being a head coach at any level is really impressive. Thanks. Even if it is temporary. But just listening to Ruby there and Johnny Sexton before we get into what you're doing in France, would you relate to what Ruby's saying there?
100%. It's... I think good that, as Ruby said, you're only as good as your last winner. It's the same thing for us. Every weekend we're judged in what we do. Not nobody thinks they're going to get 100 caps. I'm not speaking for Johnny, but I think you just concentrate on your own performance. You concentrate on what you can control, and you know, there's changes of coaches, changes of selection, form, everything that goes in, injury, everything that goes in between. So they think, oh yeah, I'm going to get 100 caps, but it's probably impossible. And I think Ruby hit the nail on the head. Like, you just concentrate on the things that drive you and the things that you control, and worry about those, and you see where you end up after that, you know.
In a different context, James, it kind of relates to yourself as well. I mean, when you finished playing for Munster, you went to play rugby in France and you ended up staying in France. When you went to play for Pau, you probably didn't think you'd still be there managing, did you? Or coaching, sorry.
No, not at all. Like the idea was, look, we'd go and have a look and see what happened, basically, to be honest with you. Ruby, there was no great master plan or anything like that, but I had it in my head that, like, that when I came over, I made a real effort to learn French as quick as I could, because sure, look, we're only an hour from home, you know what I mean? So there was always going to be the option of if I did go home or whatever it was, that, you know, you're going back on holidays, you know the area, you know, you can speak the language the whole lot. But as it worked out, it's been funny. It's I'm just trying to work out now. I was 5 years in Pau and then 2 years in between, so it's nearly 7 years now I'm in France. So it very quickly changes. So, you know, it's just and you don't see the time passing, which is great. But obviously with COVID, everybody feels like they've lost a year or two of their life because everyone was locked in or whatever it was. But no, as you say, like when I came over initially, it was to come over and to experience something new. I never thought at any stage that I'd end up where I've ended up, you know.
It's really a fascinating existence when you think about it, James, as well. Just it's almost nomadic because you're moving around so much. I'm laughing here because I'm going to say I was in France at the weekend, if anybody heard me banging on about it, but I was at the wrestling game and I met Mike Prendergast, and he's there for 9 years, and quite similar to you, went over to play, ended up staying there coaching and you know, going around to different clubs. He's in wrestling there in the middle of the pitch, so central to everything that they're doing. Is that just the options that are out there now to people that want to coach, that maybe France is almost a better bet than here because there's just so few jobs?
Yeah, well, I think Damien Mendes, our old chopper, was our old SNC coach in Munster. He texted me straight away when I moved to France, and when I went into coaching, he said, remember, coaches rent, they don't buy. So, you know, we rent houses, we don't buy houses. Look, it's just the nature of the beast, you know. It's based on performance. Obviously, it's a performance based business. Professional sport is a performance based industry. It's easier to fire one person than it is to fire 40. You know what I mean? So, you know, you do as much as you can, and you do as good a job as you can. The hours are mental, but you put in as much as you can to make sure that the performance is there at the weekend. I think what a lot of players, or former players that go into coaching, find difficult is because, you know, the control, because Johnny would have spoken about it. I'm sure Ruby is in the same boat, Marie, is that, like, you're in control when you're the one playing, when you're the one riding, when you're the one in control. You control your performance, and that's the hard part when you come out of playing and you go into coaching, is that you lose that control. You're not in control of the performance of the team because you're based on 40 other people, but also things outside of it, the noise outside of it. You're not in control of anything, really. So that's the bit you kind of just have to get your head around, is that where you do as much as you can, as best you can, you know, you have to be okay with not being in control of everything.
But to be a coach, a manager, to me, it's almost like being a teacher. You have to be able to pass that to the people working under you, and that's not a gift everybody has. But for you, from straight away, when you started in Poe, 27 of the guys in the academy under you, out of 30, got senior contracts. It's obviously something you enjoy. You're obviously able to get your point across in a teaching manner.
Yeah, well, like I'd always said, if I wasn't a rugby player, I'd have been a teacher. So maybe that's where it is. You know what I mean? The plan was to go into PE teaching. I even started when I was at home. I was starting to do the Sedanta courses and run around, getting into sports science and PE teaching and stuff. When I finished up, I was lucky enough that I moved into the academy in Poe, and we had a good bunch of lads, because you know how it is, it's cyclical. You know, we had a really good bunch of guys. Who know, you know, we've got Anton Haistoy, who's now in the French squad. Roman Bjors is in the French squad. We've sevens internationals with Mathias Colombe, and there's a few other boys now in the French Barbarian squad. You know, so you can see the progression in the guys, and that's brilliant. You know, that you kind of, you feel like if you had a hand in it. But you know, there's been a lot of people had a hand in their careers and their parents and their family, the you know, other coaches and whatever it is. But it's just, you know, it's good that you put, for those lads, I felt like we put the building blocks down for them. We showed them what it was to be a professional rugby player and what they needed to do, and the lads have gone on and built their careers around that, you know, which has been brilliant.
But yourself as well, when you think about it too, the fact that you are making a lot of progress. I know it was one game you're head coach against Beresford, but you still got to do that. Like, what was that whole experience like for you?
Yeah, it was a difficult week because Patrice Galeazzo, who was the head coach, brought me to Toulon. So I was extremely grateful to Patrice for the opportunity he gave me to bring me to Toulon, because I was laughing about it with one of the other analyst squad, you know, that we were in the backfield kicking drop goals out the back and CIT messing around. You'd never think that you'd end up in charge of Toulon at any stage. It was a strange week, but then you go total scale of things. It hits you very quickly. You're dealing with, from the academy coaches to calling international coaches about players who've been selected. So I spoke to Dave Rennie, the Australian coach, during the week about how we're going to juggle about one of the players that we had. You know, you're in contact with the French squad because the French lads were heading off. And then you're dealing with everything in between. If one of the lads hit somebody in his car, got in a car accident, so then you have to go to the police and help because he didn't speak French, and, you know, so it was literally, I got the full whack of what it was to be a manager in a professional rugby squad in 1 week. So it's brilliant, and you know, it does give you that taste of, so this is what it entails. But you know, there is an awful lot of work, and you know, you have great respect for the guys who've been able to do it for the long term, you know, because of everything that happens in between. It's probably easier international wise because you have the guys in the smaller, but the provincial coaches or the club coaches who have everything and anything to deal with on a daily basis, and then you're trying to put a management structure in place for your medical, your SNC staff, your academy staff, the administration, the partners, the dealing with the telly, dealing with the managers, there's never ending list of things to do. So, you know, give me a great insight to what it was, and then actually you have to go and win a game as well as all the other stuff, that all the other noise that's going around you. The most important thing is that you don't forget that you have to win games as well, which is what we're judged on. And luckily, I with the weather that we had this weekend, I was 100% sure that we were going to win. I was like, it has to be an Irish omen. This absolutely bucketing out of the heavens. It was a horrible wind. It was like, okay, we're good. It's like at home in Limerick or in the showgrounds, wherever it is. So thankfully, we got the result this weekend.
It was a great start to your managerial career, I suppose we'll say it. Your coaching career is going on an upward curve, but surely a top job somewhere must be your ambition.
Absolutely, yeah. I think like yourself, you want to be when you were, you know, you wanted to be on the best rides. I'm in an amazing place here in Toulon. It's one of the best clubs in the world, structural you know, with amazing facilities, with amazing, we have a squad of international players, you know, and we've everything we need, we is at our disposal. So I certainly won't be taking that for granted. I'll be trying to take the best, but like anybody, you take the best of what you can from those that you come across, and you try and mold your own kind of form in it, and then hopefully when you get an opportunity, or if you get an opportunity, that you're in the best possible position to be able to implement a plan and then to go and make an impact somewhere along the line. So like, I'm just happy now if somebody with Frank Azema coming in, who was in Claremont and for 11 years and was in Perpignan before that, was one top 14s, is one of the European competitions, just to try and learn as much as I can from Frank now while he's here, and mold my own kind of character outside of that, you know.
And you learn away from Frank there before you give him the elbow out of the way. James, thanks a million for taking our call. We're going to take a quick break.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
All right, welcome back. Let us cross very quickly back to the RSE, where Oisín Langan is at Waterford FC and Derry City. Oisín.
We're in the 42nd minute. It's Waterford 2, Derry City 1. Quaterna put Waterford up after 6 minutes, but the equaliser came after 30 minutes when Akintunde put a low zippy cross in. It was met by Lafferty on the far post and he bundled it past the goalkeeper. However, 9 minutes later, Greg Halford headed home after Patterson lifted a free kick into the box that Derry did not deal with. It's Waterford 2, Derry 1, 42 minutes almost gone in the game, and the Waterford keeper has just made a fine save from a free kick from Derry, so it remains 2-1 to the Blues. Marie.
Thanks, Oisín. Well,
cheers, Oisín. He's heaping all the pressure on home farm, but it sounds like Marie.
Right, that is all we have time for, Ruby. Very quickly, there are 3 changes for the Manchester United team from the weekend. Lindelof is unavailable, so Bailly slots into the back 3. Pogba is in for Fred, and Cavani is rested for Rashford.
Well, these 2 up front.
True. And nil all still in the Malmo-Chelsea game. Oh, Chelsea.
Is it half time yet, no?
55 minutes gone. Chelsea have just scored. Time to go, Ruby. I will talk to you next week.
Cheers, Marie.
Game on 2FM. With Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.